Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday Morning Show with your host, Phil Huff. And I am pleased this morning to have on a guest I've been hoping to interview for some time, Kurt Dyroff, the co-CEO of the National Wild Turkey Federation. Good morning, and welcome to the show, Kurt.
Good morning, Phil. Pleasure to be here.
So I think a lot of our listeners will find this a really interesting topic. It seems like the Wild Turkey Federation just has flown a little bit more under the radar than some of the other national federations dedicated to preserving wildlife and habitat. So give us a thumbnail sketch of the background of the Federation, its mission, its history.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Well, the National Wild Turkey Federation, Phil, we're a 501c3 member-based nonprofit organization. And we have a dual mission of conserving the wild turkey and preserving our hunting heritage. So back in the early 1970s or so, wild turkey populations had plummeted to around 1.3 million birds nationwide. And it was in 1973 that our founder, Tom Rogers, decided to start the National Wild Turkey Federation. We call it the NWTF for short, but he started the organization to combat the decline of the species that he so dearly cared about. And he actually put up $440 of his own money to start the organization. From those humble beginnings, you fast forward 49 years to present day, and through the dedication of our staff and our volunteers and our partners, we now have over 200,000 members, and we have enhanced or conserved over 20 million acres of habitat. That's quite a threshold and quite a milestone, and recruited over 1.5 million hunters and opened up over 600,000 acres of to public access for hunting. And I'm proud to report that the turkey population is now just north of 6 million birds. It's really one of the greatest conservation single species recovery stories in history.
Those are truly amazing numbers and quite a testimony to the success of the Federation. And it's grown quite a bit since then, both in terms of size of membership base and complexity. And tell us a little bit about your position as co-CEO. That means there's other CEOs and probably a large number of staff. It's always interesting to hear a little bit about, you know, how large an organization is from the bones side of it.
Absolutely. So flipping over to the operations side of the organization, we have right around 200 staff, and you hit on it. You know, I am a co-CEO for the organization. Newly minted, I have about 60 days under my belt in this role, but the co-CEO model is an approach we took on. Our former and actually still current CEO as well, Becky Humphreys, is retiring in February. And so that led to an internal search by our board, and they've identified two individuals that they wanted to bring alongside and under this co-CEO structure. And it's an approach that's actually being adopted by many business sectors that recognize that the world is moving at such a fast pace and scale that your traditional structures and business hierarchies and traditional ways of making decisions aren't keeping up with the world around you. And so it's been especially successful for organizations that have gone through a tough time, like a lot of businesses did here during the pandemic, and they're now poised for tremendous growth. But what it really isn't is it's not taking a CEO role and just dividing it in half. It actually reimagines that traditional CEO role. And it gives the opportunity for my colleague and counterpart, Jason Burkhalter, and myself to work deeper into the organization, maximize and fully utilize our specific skill sets and strengths where they're needed most, and to have a better and truer pulse of the organization. It also gives the people at the NWTF, our staff, our volunteers, our partners and members, better access to us. And it also allows us in this sense, I was formerly the CFO and Jason was our chief information officer and marketing officer. We retain some of those specific responsibilities. So we have a really good sense of what's going on. And in my particular role, we've divvied up some of the overall and overarching functions of the organization. So as a co-CEO, I'm responsible for mission delivery to the conservation side of our business, as well as business support. And that means our finance and accounting functions coupled with our legal and HR team, while Jason covers the fundraising side, our membership piece, as well as information and technology and marketing as well.
Each of those are really big jobs. And you touched on having come up through the organization previously as the CFO. How did you get started with the Wild Turkey Federation? What's your background?
Yeah, so maybe I'll take you didn't ask me to go this far, but I'm going to maybe take you a little bit farther, Phil. I actually grew up on the other side of the country. So I'm originally from North Central Pennsylvania. I grew up way out in the sticks. And honestly, it was an area that was quite a bit more rural than you find here in northern Idaho. Both my parents were math teachers. We had a farm. Closest neighbor was about 2 miles away, and grew up off the grid. And so we were quite a ways out there. My two older sisters and I, when we weren't working on the farm, we were spending all our time playing in the creek, catching crayfish, hunting, fishing, and just enjoying nature. And I think that was
It sounds like good turkey habitat.
it was awesome turkey habitat. That's they actually call that part of the world God's country, and it's one of the premier spots within the Keystone State for wild turkeys. And so they were very near and dear to my heart. And I think that's where the seed was planted that ultimately led me to where I am today. I didn't quite start on that path though. As a product of two math teachers, you usually end up pretty good at math. And so I went off to college to be an engineer. And I did just that. I graduated from Penn State, we are, with an engineering degree, and went right into the for-profit world. And I found myself very quickly not really enjoying the work. I was sitting behind the computer all day, and the nature of the work I was doing wasn't very fulfilling and didn't sing to my heart. And it was right about that time that I had an opportunity to take my engineering skills and go work for a nonprofit. And it was a delight. And not only was the work fulfilling, but working for a nonprofit was fulfilling for me too. I had a sense of purpose, had lots of opportunities and flexibility, and I'm still in the nonprofit to this very day for those very same reasons. And 20 years later, I find myself here as a CEO, a co-CEO of the National Wild Turkey Federation. And through that time, I've had the chance to work for a couple different outfits and wear a lot of different hats, from engineer to program manager to CFO to now CEO. But the awesome thing for me is the ability to wear those different hats to make a difference, and now to work for the, in my opinion, the best nonprofit that's out there in the business.
So how did you make your way to Bonner County? We don't see the huge building here with 100 employees that says NTWF or NWTF rather.
Well, that's, I'll cut to the chase. I think your question is, how the heck did a co-CEO of the National Wild Turkey Federation end up in Bonner County? And it's
Yes.
our headquarters is located out in South Carolina, and but our field staff especially, and have historically, we use a decentralized model. So when I say field staff, our biologists, our foresters, our fundraising staff, they're spread all across the country, and they work out of their home offices or partner offices. And so it was about 8 years ago I came to the NWTF, and I was hired in as our Western Director of Conservation Operations. And so I fell under that decentralized model structure and had the opportunity to basically live anywhere I wanted in the West in a 17-state region. It was almost like throwing a dart at a map. But my wife and I, we explored a lot of those areas and fell in love with Northern Idaho. Crossing the bridge coming into Sandpoint, it was just one of those aha moments with it was rainy and foggy, and a train was going across the bridge as well. And my wife was sold, and so was I. And since that time, I've had a chance to travel a lot of parts of the West and still love coming home. And place is really important for us. And so we love the area. We now have two kiddos that are growing up here as well, and it's nice to call it home. And so, as I've had opportunities to advance in my career at the NWTF, I've always said I'll go anywhere or I'll travel anywhere, but I always want to be able to come home. And that became a grand experiment several years ago when they asked me to come on as the chief financial officer. I mean, my entire team is back in South Carolina, and here I am out in Sandpoint saying I want to stay here. And so they made an investment in me, and they said, let's give it a run. And it worked. And not only did it work, we excelled under that model. And then COVID hit, and our entire organization went virtual. And so that little mini experiment, we'll call it the die-off experiment, turned into a 190 person experiment. And we found that we functioned quite well under a hybrid work model and virtual work model. And so it's not a bad gig. I now get to be the CEO of the organization, and I also get to live out here in Sandpoint. But it also reaffirms our commitment to our mission for the entire country. And we actually see the West as a huge opportunity for us to not only grow, but to expand and really move the needle.
It's interesting being a sort of early adopter, if you will, of the hybrid work model then, and doing it from Bonner County. And these days that's possible. And, you know, thank goodness for the internet. I think even just 10 years ago, without some of the high speed options and some of the software platforms that are out there, working a remote team that large would have been a tremendously bigger challenge. But congratulations. You've been here a while.
I have, yeah. So that full 8 years now, and both kids were born at Bonner General. But yeah, as we looked for houses, I was walking around with a hotspot to every house that we looked at when we came to the area, trying to figure out where I had a strong enough internet connection to be able to do what I do. And we were very fortunate and blessed to be able to do it all.
So you've touched on a couple things I want to make sure we unpack a little bit more. And one of those is as Western Director of Conservation. That sounds to me like in some ways it's really the heart of the work, the conservation work. So tell us a little bit more about how the organization has gone about that conservation work, what the goals are and how you achieve them.
Yeah, so, you know, I mentioned before that we have our dual-fold mission, you know, focused on conserving the wild turkey and preservation of our hunting heritage. But one of the things that's it all centers around as we try to fulfill that mission, really, I'll call it four values. The four values being clean water, healthy forest and wildlife habitat, resilient communities, and areas and opportunities to recreate. So all the work that we do works through those four values to support our mission. And, you know, you and I met, Phil, as part of the Panhandle Forest Collaborative, and you probably wondered, why the heck is the NWTF here? And then, you know, we sat down and we talked, and you said, you have a really interesting role in timber management. You know, how does that work? And I think that's one of the least understood pieces, but probably one that resonates most, especially in this part of the world. And it's a great question. Many people hear our name, you know, National Wild Turkey Federation, or they think about the turkey, and it comes up with a preconceived notion of who we are or what we might do. But on the conservation piece, we're all about healthy forest, and healthy forests require active forest management, and on both private and public forest. And so through our programs, we facilitate a lot of active forest management, a lot of timber management. And in fact, we most recently were ranked in the top five of federal timber purchasers, of all commercial federal timber purchasers. To put in perspective, it's right around 150 million board feet a year. We're the size of Vaughan Brothers, you know, just our friends over in Washington. But we do this under a program called stewardship contracting. We don't own a mill. We don't run a chainsaw and we don't haul a log, but we contract and support with all of our local entities, you know, our loggers, our mills, our haulers, to do this work. And the proceeds that are generated through this work are actually funneled right back on the federal forest to do much needed service work and to improve habitat as well. So again, we do this all to ensure clean water, healthy forest and wildlife habitat, resilient communities. And when I say resilient communities, it's something we'll probably be talking about over the next couple months. We're talking about resilient to wildfires. And that's going to be a pressing issue if it keeps as dry and as windy as it is here, and we have these dry lightning storms coming through. But also a real important one for us is to provide areas and opportunities to recreate.
I think it's a really interesting model, and you may know better than I do, but I'm struggling to think of any other conservation organization that goes about the process of conservation in the same manner, actually putting money in the arena to purchase the timber from the timber sales and then contracting back out. We tend to think of the national conservation groups that might be somewhat similar, Ducks Unlimited, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, even some of the less species specific, the wilderness organizations, state or national, but they tend to confer or collaborate or advocate for public policy, whether it's legislation or administrative decisions. You see them sitting around a table like the Panhandle Forest Collaborative discussing issues and weighing in. But here's where, unless there's someone out there I'm missing, it seems like it's somewhat unique to the NWTF.
We are certainly the leader when it comes to that particular model and using that particular authority. There are a couple other entities. Mule Deer Foundation does some of this work. And Rocky Mountain has historically, they're not doing much of it right now, but by far the National Wild Turkey Federation is the largest promoter of stewardship contracting. And so we've now done over 100 agreements with the U.S. Forest Service to do this type of work. We see value in what all the partners bring, you know, all the ones that you mentioned. We also do, you know, we have contract lobbyists as well. We work on policy and advocacy work. We actually do some land acquisition and conservation easement work too. But a big piece of what we are all about is implementation. And that defines us from a lot of the other groups is that not only are we at the table wearing those other hats, but we also get to wear the hat of implementer and driving results to the ground.
So all of this requires money, upfront money. And with the successful timber sale, I'd imagine that that program pays for itself, but tell me if I'm wrong there. But at the same time, you've got to have the upfront money to purchase the contract. Is the revenue stream primarily through membership fees, or are there other sources of funding?
It's a lot of different revenue streams for us. And back to the stewardship contract, in general, most of those projects where an organization like the NWTF can be really added benefit is a lot of times those projects don't pencil out just on the value of the timber alone. And so many of the stewardship contracts require a 20% match. And we go out and help secure that match and bring it to the table so that the work can actually be done. The health of the forest improves, the economy improves, you know, so on and so on. But how do we make it all work? It's through many different revenue streams. One of it is our membership base. And we actually have about 200,000 members, 15,000 volunteers. We have 1,500 events or banquets, if you're familiar with the term, all across the country. These are fundraising banquets. That generates about two-thirds of our revenue that we utilize here at the NWTF. We also have major donors and foundations, legacy giving programs as well. We work with our state wildlife agencies, our state forestry divisions, private partners, and then we have two significantly large federal partners that we work with in the Department of Ag, U.S. Forest Service, Natural Resources Conservation Service. And on the interior side, we also work with Fish and Wildlife Service and BLM. So it takes that entire community to bring it all together.
Yeah, there's an awful lot there. And you mentioned expansion. Tell us a little bit more about how and where the organization is expanding.
Yeah, so from a membership standpoint, the majority of our members are east of the Mississippi, but a lot of the work, and so we have a lot of mature programs over there that are hitting on all cylinders, but we see a lot of opportunities here in the West. And as you see, for example, with the bipartisan infrastructure bill, there's a lot of money coming to the West for much needed forest restoration work. And so we've been expanding our presence. And in fact, we're one of the number one partners for the Forest Service. And you'll be hearing some announcements in the upcoming months of how we're working with the Forest Service to help drive some of that money to do the much needed work on federal lands. So we are expanding, and we also, with the Natural Resources Conservation Service on the private land side, we have a national forestry initiative. We actually housed 25 forester and biologist positions with the agency to help work with private landowners and to help them steward their land and enroll in the various programs that are available to them.
So I've got to ask, you've mentioned the Forest Service, of course, is the probably largest estate holder of timber sales, at least, and private lands, state lands. Many of the Western states are rich with some form of endowment lands like Idaho and have active timber management programs. Is there a point of cooperation with the various states?
Absolutely. You know, there's a great nexus there, not only with these state forestry lands, but also with fish and game. And they go by various different names across the country, but we work with the divisions of fish and wildlife. We work with the divisions of land on the forestry side, and there's a great nexus there. I'll give you an example too. When I'm going to come full circle back to when we talked about the NWTF and its start. When it started, it was primarily focused on research, and then it moved into an era of restoring the wild turkey. And now, as you're hearing, a lot of focus on habitat and conservation. But when we started, we were basically a research organization. And one of the first things we did is start what was called the NWTF Technical Committee. That technical committee is comprised of all of the either big game or wild turkey specialists or biologists from each of the state wildlife agencies. That still persists today. And this is a body of expertise at the state level. We have this unique and strong relationship with all of these state wildlife agencies to have that expertise at the table. And we have a renewed investment that we're making in research, not just on for the wild turkey, but for habitat needs. And this technical committee is one of the groups that helps us review our request for proposals and all the research proposals that come in. And we just made an announcement recently at the National Wild Turkey Symposium, where we funded just north of $350,000 worth of research projects, some of which are here in the West.
Incredible. So upcoming programs, events, either in our area or regionally or nationally, that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention our 50th anniversary. So I said 1973, next year's our big birthday. And the beauty about being a nonprofit is you don't celebrate your birthday on one day. You celebrate it the entire year. And it's a great opportunity to generate excitement, bring people together, and really promote the organization. And the highlight or the pinnacle of next year is going to be our national convention. We hold it every year in Nashville, Tennessee. If you can make it, it's an event unlike any other. We typically have between 50 to 55,000 people come through the door to attend our national convention. We're hoping to blow that number up and set a record. They call it Turkey Town when we come in. we literally take over. If you've ever been to the Gaylord in Nashville, Tennessee, I mean, it's a 100-acre, hotel, and we take the whole thing. We book it out, and then we get the three overflow hotels nearby, and it's going to be not only a great celebration of our past, but a celebration of what we're going to accomplish in the next 50 years moving forward. So that'd be one, Phil, if you're going to mark it on your calendars, and that occurs right around Valentine's Day week every February. So we'd welcome you and love to have you come down. The other thing I'd love to mention is we just announced our new website. So if you go to nwtf.org, you'll see our new website on there. It's a new look and feel, hopefully enhances our member experience and will have drive more folks to the organization and it'll also amplify our mission.
Now, the folks listening locally, if they want to get involved, is there a local chapter? Should they sign up with the national organization? What would you say to someone who says, hey, I heard you on the radio, I want to get involved?
Yeah, and there's so many ways you can do that, Phil. You know, whether you want to dedicate your time or your talent or your treasure, I would invite you to go to the NWTF.org website. And on there, you can find ways to participate, whether you just want to make a contribution to the organization. There's also, you can find local events and chapter in your area. I'll be honest with you, they're a little light here in Northern Idaho, and we want to expand that presence. We've had chapters before all the way up to Bonner County Bonner County. And so we'd love to have your efforts and your time. If there's other opportunities that you see, you can participate in tree planting projects that we have across the state. We have some chapters within about a 50 or 60 mile radius that you can participate in, and all the contact information for those chapters and our staff that help facilitate them is on our website. But there's all kinds of ways you can participate. I'll say this, I talked about our four values, but if you're about clean water, if you're about healthy forest and habitat, if you're about resilient communities and opportunities to recreate, this is an outfit that you need to be part of. And I came to the NWTF for the mission, and I stayed for the mission. But the one thing I also found is I fell in love with the people. The people at the NWTF are just top notch, and it's so great to be part of an organization with a dedicated individuals that are so passionate about what the organization represents. So we'd welcome you with open arms, and come join us, help us start a chapter, make a difference, make a contribution.
Excellent. Well, we're winding down to the close of the questions we had to run through. Is there anything else on your mind? Any closing thoughts?
No, I just appreciate the opportunity, Phil. You know, what you do and who you represent, and just this chance to sit down and talk with you and share about the NWTF. I know we're in some ways an unknown commodity out here, but that's changing. And we're seeing the excitement. There's a lot of good work to be done, and the NWTF is going to be part of it. So thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you, Kurt. For our listeners who might have joined partway in this morning's Tuesday morning show, we've been talking with Kurt Dyroff, the co-CEO of the National Wild Turkey Federation. As with all of our morning show interviews, if you missed part of it or just want to listen to it in its entirety again, you can go to krfy.org and download the podcast. Thank you, Kurt.
Great. Thank you, Phil.